This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, trade relations between the U.S. and Canada and what they mean for our region, and how Cincy Stories is working to strengthen understanding within our communities. First up, a group of Xavier University faculty and staff, dubbed the Mission Animators, has been examining immigration, migration, and refugees in our region. As part of the project, the university is looking for documents and photographs you have that tell your history. On July 15th, Xavier will create digital copies of these items for you and, with your permission, share your history with the public. Joining us to talk about the importance of preserving and connecting with our immigrant history are Xavier University Conway Fellow on Immigration and Associate Professor of History, Dr. Christine Anderson, Dr. Sandy Koros, Xavier Professor Emerita, Xavier University Library Head of Access Services, Ann Davies, and Xavier University Associate Professor of History, Dr. Paul O'Hara. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Christine, Sandy, Ann, and Paul, thank you for being here this afternoon to tell us about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Christine, let's start with you first off. Telling us a little bit more about the Mission Animators.
The Mission Animators are a group within our Center for Mission and Identity, and they have sponsored this year an entire year of programming on immigration and migration. So a number of people received small grants. I was fortunate enough to receive the Conway Fellowship. And I think this is about the last immigration project. Next year, the Mission Animators project will be on economic justice and injustice. And so all of the programming will focus on that, and there'll be small grants again for that.
Well, tell us about this latest project.
Well, so this project focused on immigration and migration. My project has been to sponsor community discussions and involve the community in this. Other people, Dr. Koros has had a grant to translate oral history she's collecting from Soviet refugees. We've had a number of different people have. We've sponsored, Mission Animators sponsored in part an exhibit on Native Americans who were exiled from Ohio. We've had projects on contemporary immigration and refugees, just a number of projects all year long to try to involve the community and the university in this important topic.
And tell us about the document scanning. How's that going to work?
Well, we are going to have a couple of different scanners set up. Here in the library, we have a couple of Minolta book scanners, and there are also some flatbed scanners. So we imagine that what will happen on the day is people will bring in the documents, and we will scan them on the book scanner and save them onto a flash drive that we will give the people back so they have a digital copy of their photograph. At the same time, we're going to ask their permission to store the materials on Xavier's digital repository called Exhibit. And then we would be able to give people a link to the documents there also, and they can be searched on that site.
And can anybody just bring in their documents, or there certain eligibility requirements for doing this, Anne?
To my understanding, and Christine can add to this, we were sort of thinking if people could bring up to 5 documents, just because more than that would take more time. But anything really that relates to their immigration, we would be interested in.
The other advantage, I know some folks at home probably have whole cartons of photographs and documents, and we can't do all of those. But if they bring in a few things, then our librarians can help them find out how they could best preserve those, where they can do it for minimal cost, ways that they want to organize and share that material. So there's really some other benefit just besides your flash drive.
Yeah. Right. And by saving them to the digital repository, we will, you know, sort of catalog them so that people searching that topic could find those photographs or documents, papers, whatever we need to scan.
And Anna, it's July 15th at Xavier's Library, right? And what are the hours?
Right, it's in the Connaughton Learning Commons. There's an auditorium called Kennedy Auditorium there on the fourth floor, and it's from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Saturday the 15th.
And there is free parking in the admissions parking lot at Xavier on Dana Avenue.
Sandy, I'm wondering if your family has a great immigration story. Can you share that with us?
Well, the document that I brought to Chris to save is a letter it's a certified document from which my mother received her passport. My mother originally came to the United States. She had been a refugee in Vienna, Austria, from the Russian Empire because of the revolution. She was born in 1904. And when they got to Vienna, my grandmother, who was a very unusual woman, sent her to the university because she believed that men could work with their backs, but women had to have an education. So my mother completed a PhD in chemistry at the University of Vienna, and she completed that degree in 1928. And then because of one of her professors, she was able to get a postdoc in the United States at Iowa State College in Ames, Iowa, which is now Iowa State University. And she arrived at Iowa State, I guess, for the 1928-29 academic year. And when she completed her postdoc, she had difficulty finding a job because she was a woman. When they found that the E on her name stood for Elizabeth, they were very reluctant to hire her. And she finally got a job in Pittsburgh and then discovered she was working illegally. And she needed to get the equivalent of a green card or a passport or some kind of permission to work. And she did that by marrying a young man in Pittsburgh from the Jewish community as well. And in order to obtain that American citizenship or documentation, she had to leave to go to Montreal. And she stayed in Montreal for some period of time. And this document is the document which was to give her, it's called In Lieu of a Passport. And this is her affidavit, which explains that she's been living in Montreal and that she was born in the Russian Empire and that her husband, who had also been born in the Russian Empire, had become a naturalized citizen in the United States in 1921. This document is dated April of 1930. And because he was a citizen and her passport, which was actually not a passport, but a laissez-passer, which allowed refugees to move from country to country, had been sent to Washington, she could not reenter the United States. And so she had to be issued this particular document, which not only has this nice big red seal on it from the Commissioner Superior Court of the District of Montreal, but also a beautiful picture of my mom, who was 26 years old at the time. And this is how she was able to stay in the United States because of Mr. Pokempner, whom I had never, my mother never talked about this when I was growing up. She and my father, who came to the States in 1932, were able to save my grandmother and my aunt and my uncle and other cousins who were able to live in the United States. And my mother worked as a chemist until I was born in 1946. And the work that she did during the war was actually very important. My mother worked for Merck, and her boss was in charge of the Merck project to synthesize penicillin, and she was the liaison to the British scientists, several of whom were actually also Russian Jews, who had come to the United States from Oxford to work at Merck. And she never talked about it, never. And only in 1983, when we were in Oxford and she saw the Rose Garden dedicated to them, did she start going, oh, there's Dr. So-and-so, and there's Dr. So-and-so. And my husband and I looked at her and said, how did you know that? And she goes, oh, I worked with them all. So she made her contribution, and the fact that she was able to stay in the United States. And this is the document that enabled her to stay.
It's in such good shape. How have you kept that in such good
shape? I have absolutely no idea. No idea.
I wouldn't know that came from 1930 if you hadn't told me. It doesn't.
I have no idea. I think mostly my mother preserved it, and it got collected in a whole bunch of things. And then I was looking through stuff because when you retire, you start trying to figure out what you do with things. And I found it, and I said, this is perfect for Chris to preserve. And it's such a great picture of my mom, too. So, and of course, I never knew her when she was 26. So but it does something else. And this is where the historian, it's not only telling the story, but it allows us to talk about a whole variety of things. So, for example, we were just talking about how women achieved citizenship in the early 1930s and how a woman's citizenship was linked with that of her husband's. And these are things that I'm not an American historian, I'm a Russian historian. I didn't know anything about. And so when you preserve a document, you are talking about a whole different world. It opens up stories about family. It allows you to teach students about how things changed in a world that we have access to because we have these documents.
That one little document gave you all these avenues to explore about your mother's history.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, talk about that a little bit more, Paul, the importance of preserving and connecting with our immigrant history.
Well, immigration history in particular is a deeply personal history. It is about families and the decisions they make and the hardships they endure. And immigration history, you can look at the big pictures, the big laws, and we know that terms like documented and undocumented, right, authorized and unauthorized, are tremendously important and politicized and personal. But a document like Sandy's, especially coming in the early 1930s, gives us a window into this very important moment when those terms of documented are first implemented and being fleshed out, because this comes from a law in 1924 that essentially closed the door, the Johnson-Reed Act, and made people have to have a visa, have to have a passport before they could enter into the U.S. Afraid of the Russian Revolution, afraid of European radicalism, afraid of a lot of things, right? It forces this idea of documentation. Refugees as a political category didn't exist yet. It doesn't happen until after World War II. So there's this need for documentation. And part of these kinds of specific documents, and it's a lovely document, right? And it has that beautiful picture and all of it's – so it's Sandy's history and it's her family history. But it also plugs in right in this key moment when the 24 law is kicking in and being implemented, but people are finding ways around it, and the citizenship law is shifting and changing, and it's a way to really make that legislative history come alive, because there are people moving within and under and around this legislative history.
You know, there's been this renewed interest in learning the history and of our ancestry and the history of immigration. Is this a little different than when the first generation of immigrants came to the United States and they were looking maybe more forward than they were looking into the past?
I think possibly. I mean, so part of what happens between the first big waves of the Irish in the 1840s up through the southern and eastern European waves in the late 19th century is that it wasn't documented. There are very few of these kinds of documents that are left. And I think the fascination with, in particular, say, Irish heritage and Irish traditions and people who travel back to Ireland or travel back to Scotland, try to find these roots, I think there's still a desire to make that connection and to find that heritage. But part of what happens beginning in the teens, certainly accelerating through the 20s, is documentation and having these documents.
Christine, what do you think makes this an important project?
I think it's important in a number of ways. One of the things that this will enable people to do, it's really only a first step. You can digitize a document. We'll save it on our website, but we can't guarantee it will be there forever. We're going to share with people information on how to preserve it, some advice on, for example, don't use Photoshop if you only have it to save your photographs if you only have it at work. because you won't be able to access them at home when you retire, to collect their stories. We'll have forms for them to fill out. We'll have a video camera for those who want to video their stories. I don't know if there's a history of this or not, Paul. In my family, there are some immigration stories that are perhaps more imaginative than historical. And so the closer to the time they are, the more we can identify people. In my family, we threw away a whole carton of 19th century photographs because we didn't know who any of those people were. So to be able to identify those people, to say why this object was important to them. So if people want to bring in a piece of jewelry or a piece of, you know, a china cup, if that's something that's important to people, they can digitize it, share it with other people, and they can make sure that it's going to be preserved. Sandy is very lucky that that document is in such good shape. Mm-hmm. Partly
it
because,
is amazing.
Partly because paper was of much higher quality.
It's
really true. So newspaper, for example, has a lot of acid, mm-hmm. and it sort of eats itself. It's really sad. So you want to be able to, as wonderful as that document is, you want to be able to save it. Your daughter, your grandsons will find that a very valuable thing, as will your community. Mm-hmm. You may want to share that with the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education, mm-hmm. might find it interesting. So all of those things, I think, make this an important effort.
Christine, can you give us the details one more time?
Sure. It's Saturday, July 15th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., on the fourth floor of the Connaughton Learning Commons, parking on Dana Avenue in the admissions parking lot.
Christine, Sandy, Ann, and Paul, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Xavier University Conway Fellow on Immigration and Associate Professor of History, Dr. Christine Anderson, Dr. Sandy Koros, Xavier Professor Emerita, Xavier University Library Head of Access Services, Ann Davies, and Xavier University Associate Professor of History, Dr. Paul O'Hara. Coming up, we'll take a look at trade relations between the U.S. and Canada and what they mean for our region. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.